This is WKOK Sunrise on your station for the best news, talk, and sports. News Radio 1070 WKOK and WKOK.com.
And thank you so much for joining us on WKOK Sunrise. Rob Center, fabulous, you betcha, in every way, superlatively so. Mr. Macatrillo's over in the newsroom monitoring traffic. He says there is nothing noteworthy on the traffic map, so we'll all keep an eye on that with him. But we don't see anything on the Google traffic. We check Google traffic a couple to two, three times an hour in the morning, so you do not have to, and we don't see any exceedingly slow slowdowns around here. That might be good news to our guest in the studio with us now is Samantha Pearson, Lewisburg Neighborhoods Corporation Elm Street Manager and the Walk It, Bike It Coordinator. Welcome aboard. Thanks for coming in.
Hi, Mark. How are you doing?
Good, good, good. Always good to see you. Thanks for coming. These are monthly visits. If folks are saying, well, wasn't she just on with good, important information? And the answer is yes, but very glad to have you back.
Right. We're just making the habit of it.
One of the things, it's been a through line through our discussions for a half dozen of our discussions lately, the Lewisburg Traffic Study meeting. What's the status of that briefly?
Good question. I don't believe it has been finalized and scheduled yet. We will definitely let people know once we're ready, but we just want to make sure it's a productive meeting and summer basically interfered.
Now, Northumberland's open for business again. No truck detours there. So traffic volumes are reduced in Lewisburg. Is that noticeable? Do you happen to know that?
That's a good question. I actually was not around for the last couple weeks, so I am not entirely sure. Just in the last 2 days, slightly better.
Okay. So with reduced traffic, with Norrie wide open, is it imperative that we have the conversation in Lewisburg?
Yes, because this is about a bigger picture and a longer horizon. This has been a wake-up call. We've had projections on the books for a while now showing that this, what we had recently, is supposed to be normal in coming years, not that long from now. And so we need to be proactive because it wasn't just theoretical. Everyone could see how destructive it was.
All right. Yes, some folks said the traffic volumes were really only about 2 years ahead of schedule, which you'll be experiencing on a regular basis in Lewisburg, not just with car traffic, but with truck traffic, too. So
indeed. And it's really the trucks that are the most disruptive thing for us. I mean, now, through traffic in general is not necessarily all that productive for a dense community, but the cars don't necessarily, they aren't as destructive. Literally, if you look up how much impact a truck has on a road, just for road construction purposes, it's multiple orders of magnitude, like three orders of magnitude, like thousands of times worse than each individual truck than a car. And that is just, and those, there are different ways of calculating that, but all of them come up with really large numbers.
All right, and I always give you an opportunity to repeat, you ain't anti-truck.
No, I'm not. I know truckers, actually.
And if you got it, a truck brought it.
Right, right. And certainly aware of, we're certainly aware of the critical role that trucking plays in our economy and how critical it is for many local residents in their families as employment. But we do also think that there are more sensible routes. One of the things, actually, because I was away for 2 weeks traveling, I got a reminder again of once we do have the bypass, it's not clear yet. One of the things that's really being debated or contested is, you know, where are people going to drive? I'm pretty sure the trucks are going to be very happy to be on the bypass. It really does make a difference not to have to, you know, slow all the way down, speed up and slow down, speed up and slow down. Those are the things they're trying to avoid. And those sort of big sweeping movements may really be attractive to them. We still do have to see how that's going to play out for the truck trips originating or ending in our region, but I think the CSVT is going to be very attractive.
All right, so you should see less traffic volume just about everywhere, and that's worth talking about when we bring you in here, when you're wearing your Walk It, Bike It hat in particular, and one of the informed individuals that's talking about Lewisburg's traffic study. So we'll look for that in the weeks or months ahead.
Yeah, just for a little bit of perspective on how the world might look a little different from a Walk It, Bike It perspective. You mentioned looking at Google Maps for information.
Google traffic.
Google
yeah.
traffic on, for traffic information. A lot of people don't know that Google has information on bike routes and walking routes. You can actually plug that in. In fact, it will often save your settings. And so then when you're driving in your car and your husband, you know, looks up how long is it going to take us to get to wherever you're going for lunch in, you know, two states away, it will come up with 3 days and 16 hours.
Okay. So that means you're riding a bike to said location.
Walking,
right?
Yes.
That'd be like a Joe Snedeker. He probably has that on his
right
all the time. Okay, so the Lewisburg traffic study is still an imperative
yes.
event, and the traffic study meeting not yet scheduled, but will be in the months ahead. I wouldn't be surprised if it is not in August, and it's rather a fall meeting, but you do want to have the most bang out of that opportunity when you can, particularly since the funds are locally generated. It's not just like you got a federal grant to study traffic. Their stakeholders are all local individuals. So we'll keep an eye on that. Well, you've been here talking about safety elements in the past and events that are coming up. So let's talk about if you're riding a bicycle around here, what should you know? And if you're driving a car and you come upon a bicycle, what should you do?
Well, so in general, we have been working on this idea of how you pass a bike, and it can be new for people. So the big thing is slow down, then go around. That's the little memeable version. We have now posted that on our website. We have a fairly long post, as all of our posts are. Gets into the weeds with state law, and which does require 4 feet of clearance when you're passing a bicycle on a road. Does allow you to cross the yellow line, but only when safe to do so. So we really talk about that in some detail. But we also want to talk about sort of more less legally defined things. I would like to talk about some of the mysterious things that cyclists do, at least from drivers' perspectives. Many drivers who don't themselves ever ride a bike have questions. I welcome hearing from people who do have additional questions. These are some of the things that we do hear. Some questions might be, why are the cyclists wiggling their handlebars at an intersection? I can't tell what they're doing. I think they're turning. And the answer is, if a cyclist is wiggling their handlebars, they're not going anywhere. Because if you're going forward and you wiggle your handlebars, you turn.
You drive all over the place.
Right. It has an impact. What they're doing, wiggling their handlebars, is actually trying to stay still and stay up. They probably don't have a foot on the ground, and they're balancing. And that's how they do that. So you may see a cyclist with their wheel turned all the way to the right, and then they go straight. But that was just about balancing and then continuing.
Like a unicycle goes backward.
Yes.
And what do you know about unicycling?
A very little bit, but I'm working on it. I'm getting
okay.
better.
I knew that.
I'm really slow.
Okay.
I mean, slowly learning.
But you know how to ride a unicycle.
I am learning how to ride a unicycle.
Okay.
Yes.
Anyway, I just had to put that in there.
Okay.
Riding a bike and knowing being an informed bikist wasn't enough, or bicyclist, but...
It has a certain fascination for me.
Okay. What are some other strange things that you bike riders, and I guess I ride bike a little bit too.
Sure. Well, so some drivers wonder, why don't bikes signal every time they turn or come to an intersection? And the answer is, number one, if they're able, they should signal, but there are many conditions under which they're not able to signal. And those conditions frequently pertain when you're at an intersection. If they're going very slowly, it may be very too hard to balance and take a hand off the handlebar. If they're going very fast, it may be like you're coming down a hill and making a turn. It may be too dangerous to take a hand off the handlebar.
Well, that's where your brakes are, too. You should
yes. You also, you may need to keep your hands on your brakes. Though, as with driving, you can make all signals needed with the left arm. You don't have to lift your right hand off. You want to be able to brake with your right hand so you don't flip over the handlebars accidentally. Not that anyone does that on purpose that I'm aware of. I guess there are stunt riders, and maybe they use
YouTube.
It to do a handstand on the
YouTube
handlebars.
Teens.
Yes. There's also the factor of poor surfaces. If you're riding on a poor surface, taking one hand off the handlebar may be problematic, whether it's gravel, a broken up road surface, things like that. So that's another thing that's confusing to drivers. And it's, I think, a little bit of insight into the realities for the rider. It's not necessarily perversity.
All right, one more mysterious thing.
Okay. Why doesn't the cyclist respond when I wave them through the intersection? The answer on this, you might be in a car, you might be stopped at an intersection, and just be like, go ahead, go. A, they may not be able to see you. You can see wonderfully out of your windshield, but depending on sun angles and relative lighting conditions, you may be basically invisible to them. B,
not
they
the
may
whole car, just the interior.
Right. No, you can definitely see the car, but yeah, you as the driver may be essentially invisible. And B, basically, they may see other things that you don't see. Plus, they may just be trying to take their appropriate turn in the queue of traffic.
From news across the world to events in your community, hear about it all on WKOK Sunrise on News Radio 1070 WKOK and WKOK.com.
And thank you so much for joining us again on WKOK. Mr. Matt Catrillo's over in the newsroom saying everything's fine. Traffic here. Upper Road, East Cameron Township has a tree down. So it's we now understand that that's a blockage there. So we'll keep an eye on that. That's just south of Treverton. So watch for a possible turnaround opportunity on Upper Road. In the studio with us now, Samantha Pearson Back, Walk It, Bike It Coordinator in Lewisburg and Lewisburg Neighborhoods Corporation Elm Street Manager. Welcome back.
Thanks, Mark.
Appreciate that. Mysterious things that cyclists do, wiggling the handlebars so that they can stay upright without pedaling, crossing the yellow line occasionally when safe to do so, as some motorists could do to get around them. Sometimes not using their hand signals when biking. What else?
I did want to point out a couple more, and we are going to have a post about this on our website pretty soon. And we welcome other people to suggest more, like I said. Another thing they might do, or a question that motorists might have, are why is the cyclist in the middle of the lane? And there are a couple of different answers for that, but first of all, legally they are allowed to be in the middle of the lane, the rightmost lane typically, but in many roads that is the lane. They can also be in a left lane if they are turning left. So they're allowed to be in the lane. They may be there for various reasons. It could be that there are cars likely to open their doors parked, parked cars along the road, and they're avoiding the door zone. It may be that they're in a situation where they feel a little bit unsafe and unseen, and being in the middle of the lane makes it easier for drivers to see them. And it could be, say, if they're coming to an intersection and you may be on a cross street or something, they may need to be in the middle of the lane in order to trigger the traffic signal. Depending, it could be a loop in the road, it could be a video camera, but you have to be in a very specific place often in order to make that happen.
Right, walkitbikeitlewisburg.org if you want to participate in this discussion online.
Correct. We also have another big one is a mysterious thing that cyclists do. We get from drivers is, why are they riding within 4 feet of me? This is an informed driver asking that, because in the state of Pennsylvania, drivers are required to leave 4 feet of clearance when they pass a bike, between their vehicle and the bike. Bikes do not have to leave that 4 feet of clearance. Now, what are the circumstances in which the bike will be within 4 feet of a car? Often it will be when the car is either stopped or going very slowly and the cyclist is passing it. In those situations, the dynamic is totally different. It's also legal for the cyclist to be there, but the physics are different. The car doesn't present as great a threat. This is why also, if you're in a situation trying to pass a bike and you just don't have clearance, coming to a stop may be the best answer. The cyclist can get past you, or a runner, an oncoming runner could get past you much closer. In other words, you don't have to cross to the other side of the road if you're not moving. It's just safer for them. So similarly, how does this happen? You could be coming up to a stoplight. You may be stopped at the light. You may be in a queue of cars, and the cyclist can just pull up all the way to the light if they're able to do so. This is a legal maneuver.
It is a legal maneuver. Okay.
But it is confusing to drivers. We're aware. Most cyclists are aware of that.
It irritates drivers.
Well, if you think about it, it actually makes a lot of sense. It doesn't make sense that only cars are allowed to pass cyclists, right? There are circumstances in which cars pass cyclists. And then the idea that, say, if you're in a more congested area and there are 10 cars stacked up, why should the cyclist never be able to pass the cars? Basically, the cyclist can get up to the intersection. In many jurisdictions, they're starting to put in what's called bike boxes, where the stop line may actually have a widening of a bike lane in front of it, which allows more bikes to fit up at the front. They may also have leading intervals on their signals, which allow the bikes to get a head start so they can get up to speed and start moving before the cars get the green. So all of these things sort of work together. But it is what I just want to acknowledge is this can be very confusing for drivers who aren't accustomed to it. I have to say it was interesting. While I was away, I got the opportunity to cycle in Nantucket. And on Nantucket Island, there are a lot of bikes in the summer, as you can imagine. It's a good way for them to mitigate the number of cars they would otherwise have. And the scale of the island is perfect for cycling. I think the island is a little bit over 10 miles wide. So I think we rode 30 miles in one day, but easily. But basically, the drivers really do respond very well to cyclists. I talked to a couple of people there, and they did say that the driver's ed program at the high school for locals does emphasize how to safely drive in the presence of bikes, but that there haven't otherwise been other campaigns or educational programs. So there are certainly people who bring their bikes, their cars over on the ferry. I was impressed by their ability to negotiate the fairly in often fairly tight spaces sharing between bikes and cars.
Do you pay to bring a bike over, or do you just pay for yourself to get
over? Oh, on the ferry? Mm-hmm. Oh, you can pay to bring a bike over. We actually just rent it over there. We don't keep nice enough bikes in Massachusetts, so.
Okay, well, I figured, okay. All right, so that's one distant location. Tell me about the Netherlands. You mentioned that this is something that's kind of been top of the mind to you. So the Netherlands, what's happening there? You were there a year ago, and a lot of people commute by bike there.
Yes, and recently I've been reading the book, The Dutch Blueprint for Cycling, which is about how Dutch cities are built. It came out just recently. It's an excellent resource. One of the things that's interesting in it is it talks about the history of cycling in the Netherlands, both sort of the technology, what bikes they ride, and also how it came about. And I think it would be interesting for Americans to know that it wasn't always like it is now. I think that's a really important insight that, you know, post-World War II, you know, there were many cities in the Netherlands that were completely bombed out and got rebuilt and rebuilt for cars. And even things that hadn't been completely destroyed in the war were being basically reconfigured for cars. There were proposals for Amsterdam to cover all but one or two canals with, sequential car-friendly boulevards. Thankfully, this didn't come to pass in Amsterdam. And in other cities, they actually did have, you know, the car really was taking over. And there were basically protests. Too many children were dying. Children on bikes being killed by drivers. Over time, in a series of different cities throughout the country, basically the cars were seen to be a threat, both to health, wealth, well-being, and they gradually moved away from them. But I think it is helpful to see that the Dutch were all in on cars at one time, and they turned that around.
Well, and here in the U.S., we're just in on cars. I mean, biking is just an asterisk in our planning.
I would say that's still definitely the case here, but you'd be surprised. Places that you haven't visited in 10 or 15 years, often you go and you're like, wow, there's all this bike infrastructure here. I don't remember that. It's really happening all over the country. I do think there are challenges in our area, but I think I invite people to sort of keep their eyes open as they travel around. And look for new and different things that may appear. I biked in Boston for many years. I commuted there by bike without a lot of infrastructure, and now I go back and I'm amazed by the amount of provisions for cars, accommodation, and the number of bikes on the road.
Right, and make sure that folks let their community leaders know that they're interested in bicycles. You know, the township supervisors or the borough council might not think bikes top of the mind. So make sure that you let them know that you're riding bicycle in their community and that thinking about bikes is going to be important. We have to get to some quick events coming up. Picnic in the Park is August 18th.
That's right. We're doing a picnic in the park, and it's a little different this year. That's a Sunday afternoon. We'll be doing it from 6 to 7:30 p.m. that night, and we will be at Lewisburg Landing, which is right by the St. George Street boat ramp. We'll be there instead of our traditional location over at Soldiers Memorial, partly to just sort of introduce people to the park and also introduce our new public paddle option.
Picnic there is Soldiers Landing is where?
St. George Street Landing is at the intersection of St. George and South Front Street.
Okay, so that's easy enough for people to find. And it's marked well, or will be that night.
Right. It is. We're working on marking. That's one of the things we are doing. We will be unveiling the signs that we're developing for the site.
Okay, and let's see. You were about to talk about the public paddle.
Yes, so part of a grant that we got from the First Community Foundation of Pennsylvania is helping us to put up a boat rack. It's basically a boat trailer, which you can already see on the site. And it will be equipped with several loaner kayaks, canoes, and paddles, and personal flotation devices, life vests, that people who sign up will be able to access if they want to use them. The goal is mostly to enable people to paddle in the area, not necessarily to paddle down to Northumberland or not so much one-way paddles as a little bit of paddling around the mouth of Buffalo Creek and that whole area off Lewisburg.
So sign up, you'll be able to go borrow a kayak?
Yes.
A life jacket and paddles?
Yes.
And away you go.
Yes, the life jackets will be readily available at all times. The other things will be locked, and you will be able to get access to the combination if you sign a safety waiver, participate in a safety briefing, and either pay a small fee, very small, or give us some volunteer hours.
Walk it, bike it, Lewisburg.org, the clearinghouse for all of this.
And LewisburgNeighborhoods.org.
Oh, see, you got to tell me which hat you're wearing.
Yeah.
Elm Street manager, Samantha Pearson. How long is your Elm Street manager title going to last?
That's a good question. We still are using it, but at the state level, Elm Street exists, but Lewisburg is no longer an official part of the program. We still get, however, a certificate from the Pennsylvania Downtown Center every year recognizing our program. So make of that what you will.
Walk It, Bike It, Lewisburg continues, and you're the coordinator thereof. Walk It, Bike It, Lewisburg.org. Samantha Pearson, thank you so much.
Thanks, Mark.